get our weekly view from the north, and this time I remember the walk-up music. He has morphed into the modern-day media version of a Swiss Army knife, writing, TVing, radioing, Rip City Radio, The Bridge with Bree and Serena. Check out the shows, NBC Northwest, the website, follow on Twitter, the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, happy Friday. How are things?
Not bad, man. How are you?
All right. You know, it gets harder and harder to introduce you. By the time I go through the list, it's like, well, been great.
Segment's over.
Yep. Look forward to talking next week. But So I caught the bridge early this week, late last. You were talking with Brianna, and I learned something about you. So while you are an MLB fan, Cubbies, you're what you would call, as opposed to football and hoops, kind of a newer baseball fan?
You must be referring to the segment we did on the women's clinic.
Yeah, that was it. Like I said, it's hard to keep up with you.
Yeah, so in high school, grade school and high school, I didn't care that much for baseball at all. And then when I got to college, especially out at Pacific University, I had a lot of friends who played on the baseball team, and I covered them for our school paper, and I lived with a couple of them. And by being around it more often, I learned a lot more about the game. And how it works more intricately, and so that gave me a better appreciation for it, and so that helped me become more of a fan of it. And I would say that in 1989 was the year the Cubs lost to the Giants in NLCS, and I barely paid attention. I was a Cubs fan, but like just because I was from Chicago, but I barely paid attention. But then that next year, I was like pumped up and got all into it, and then they sucked for the next 15 years. But I got more into baseball in part because I understood more of what. You know, the little things that were going on that you only know from playing it. I didn't play it, but just from hanging around it and living with guys who played it, I learned a lot more about it.
So, that was a neat little Fentress twist. I saw you tweeted about what Mark Teixeira said about his complete lack of surprise over Robbie Cano, you know, friends right. with A-Rod, Melky Cabrera, Biogenesis. But is there a more tired act in sports than the player who fails a test and says, it's the doctor, it's the prescription, it's the tainted meat, and I didn't know what I was taken.
Yeah, it's sad. At least he didn't do a press conference and swore up and down how innocent he was, and this is a mistake just like Braun did, or throw a bunch of people under the bus like A-Rod and Lance Armstrong did. At least he just issued a silly statement. But here's the deal. Yes, a doctor in the Dominican gave him that diuretic because it was for a physical ailment, then all you have to do is show the doctors approved by the MLB that you actually have that physical ailment and needed that diuretic, right?
Right.
It's very simple. And then they go, oh, yeah, he does have this, and this is the right thing. That's why he's taking it. But that's not what's going down, and he's not even appealing this decision because he knows he used it to mask something he shouldn't have been taking. I mean, it's just only obvious, you know, and it sucks for the Mariners. They're playing well. They're in the hunt in the AL West. I mean, they're probably not going to win it. They're probably not good enough to overtake the Astros or even the Angels, but at least they're in the mix. And you just lost your best player for 80 games. You know, the team saves $12 million. Maybe they can take that money and go out and try and make a trade to bring a veteran in that's pretty good that a team's trying to dump. And they can absorb that salary with the money they save on Cano. But no matter how you look at it, it ruins the season, because even if they were somehow magically get into the playoffs, they wouldn't be able to get Cano back for that either.
Right. So genius.
It's a bad team all around. He has 5 years remaining on his contract. He's already 35. If I'm the Mariner, I'm thinking, man, I should be able to get out of this contract because the guy I paid $240 million to over 10 years is not the guy I thought he was. And if he can't juice anymore, because if he gets busted in the game, he's out for a year, and then I think life after that, or 2 years, whatever.
Yep.
Then if he can't juice anymore, then is he going to be any good? And he's also getting older, so that means I'm going to be paying a lot of money for a guy who's really going to slide downhill now that he can't do what he was doing before.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like if you look at the deal, would you pay a 36-year-old a 5-year, $120 million deal? Because that is it's amazing. So let's get to what really matters. The Supreme Court finally caved into me and will allow states to permit gambling. All of it.
I heard it's called the Tannen ruling.
I don't see why they don't. I've been screaming about it for decades.
Yeah.
But now, I saw you commented on this. So now the NBA, NFL, MLB, who've been fighting this tooth and nail, are like, well, we want our cut. What is that all about?
Man, I'm going to say right now, we had a guy on today, spokesperson for the Oregon Lottery, And I said, do not give them one red penny. I think they see there's going to be a lot of money made off of this, and they want a piece of it. But I don't think they're entitled to any of it. I don't think this has their fingerprints on it at all. Now, their argument is, well, we're putting on the games. Well, yeah, you're putting on the games, but guess what? The states are putting, you know, allowing you to build an arena and allowing you to have a team in their state. And granted, you know, states and cities benefit from them, but they're providing the people to come to your game. So everyone's providing something to the entity, but that doesn't mean you're entitled to take a piece of the cut the states are going to make from people gambling their hard-earned money away, which is what's going to happen. And I can see, I guess, where the NBA and NFL maybe want to jump in on that, but at the end of the day, they have no authority in that regard. They can't. What are they going to do? You're going to yank your teams out of every state that won't let you get a piece of the pie? Well, I think that's going to be every state. Now, the NBA, Adam Silver, wants some kind of congressional oversight to sort of force this to happen, but I don't believe that's going to happen. I would be shocked if it did. I would, if I'm a state, I'd tell the teams, you know what? Kick rocks.
Yep. No.
Plus, here's the other thing. Teams are gonna, everyone already believes that gambling is going to, legalized gambling is going to increase the amount of people who are going to be watching games they never would watch. I mean, think about all the games where someone's going to go, oh, Oakland A's are playing the Padres today. Who cares about that? Well, I've got the A's minus 125. I care. And then you have people watching games they never would have watched before, which increases ratings, which increases revenue, and teams will get more money that way.
No, I agree. My battle cry is not one thin dime. Talking with Aaron Fentress, NBC Northwest, NBC Sports Northwest, Rip City Radio. So I wanted to ask you something. Now you're a radio guy. You do it multiple hours a day. You take calls. You need topics. Has anybody yet got you and Dwight to offer a take on the Stanley Cup playoffs, or have you avoided that?
We have avoided that. And Dwight likes hockey, so actually I didn't mention him. Look, if you want to talk hockey, go ahead and talk hockey. I'll just sit there and nod. But, you know, if hockey comes to the Northwest, then I think we have to start paying more attention to it, or at least I do. Dwight already does. So, but, you know, we have not talked about it at all, other than, like, in the updates.
Right.
On the hour, we'll say what the score was last night or who plays tonight. And I have to, like, read it over two or three times so I know what the hell I'm talking about. I'm just reading a score.
All right. I was curious. These things pop up. It's a different world. So I also saw you and Dwight had Gary St. Jean on, who, of course, people in the Bay Area. He was a coach or assistant, Kings and Warriors. And it was after Houston evened the series. And I think maybe a few too many conclusions were jumped to, because bottom line is Golden State took back home court edge. So what did he have to say? He given the Rockets any chance, or is he kind of with me and you, and we'll see in the NBA finals?
Yeah, he fully expects, you know, the Golden State to bounce back. That, you know, they had a bad day. Steph had a bad night. Houston was going at him hard to try and punish him on D, and then hopefully wear him out on offense. And it worked. Steph Curry, actually, I went back and looked. That was the first time in Curry's history that he's had back-to-back games where he only made one three-point field goal.
Wow.
Yeah, so what that means to me, I think he's 2-for-13 in this series. That means he's about to go 9-for-12 any moment now, right? But, you know, here's another thing for you. So dating back to the finals last year when they lost one game to Cleveland, they've now lost four postseason games in two seasons. By 14, 19, 16, and 26 or something like that. When they lose big. And in every case, either they played horribly on offense, like shooting, you know, 38% total or only making 11 out of 35 three-pointers, or the other team shot lights out. Houston shot 52% the other night. And last year in the finals against Cleveland, they got beat. Cleveland shot like 24 of 45 from three, like 55%. They were just bombs away, scored 137 points or something. So usually something kind of weird happens or crazy happens, which is sort of what basketball is about. But then Golden State always comes back, rights the ship, and puts you in your place. And I just think that's going to happen. They're going to win the next two games. I'll be shocked if they didn't win both games.
Yeah, I'm with you, especially when they get to Roracle. Couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress. You and Bree hit on a topic I love. For the newer sports viewers, you know, it's just convenient. We get every angle, replay, every game is on, all questions answered in real time. But you guys came up with a list of what folks watching now don't have to put up with. And at the top, I thought it was interesting, just basic game information that we used to have to wait for.
Yeah, so I like going back and watching old games, football and basketball. And what strikes me when I do watch those things is how different the broadcasts are. And one of the things is the lack of a clock always going to see how much time's left in the quarter, and then the score. And it just reminds you of what it was like. And sometimes, like on classic sports, we'll have like Lakers-Boston Game 4, 1984, and you're watching it, and you have no clue what the score is when someone scores. When someone scores, they'll throw the score up. If no one scores, you could go on like a three-minute drought when no one scores, and you'll never see the score. And then you don't know how much time's left. No clue. You're kind of like, even though it's 25 years ago, so the game doesn't matter, I'm sitting there going, what part of the game is this?
Right.
They're not showing me. And so if my memory serves me correctly, I remember when cable started jumping on the NBA bandwagon, I think in the mid to late 80s, when it became more popular because of Magic and Bird, and TBS would air games, and I remember them having the permanent score up. And I think I can't remember if they began with a permanent clock. I know it came later, but I remember they always had the score. I remember thinking how amazing that was. Oh, my God. And then every time someone would score, it would add up. Two more points would be added. And that was just like a huge deal. So the other thing I remember, too, you probably remember this. This, when they did show a clock, it was a filled-in shot of the clock. Of a clock in the arena.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't
shot
have
from
their
another
own
camera, and then they'd throw it in there. You could tell it was actually a live clock. It's just hilarious.
It's great. It's like the Vin Scully once told a great story. His predecessor, because of the radio and what you're talking about, said buy a 3-minute egg timer, and the minute you notice it's done, give the score, inning,
the score
and circumstance. Yeah, it's
there's another thing I noticed about 80s football is that, so you know how now team scores. PAT commercial, kickoff commercial, come back and start. Well, back then, they didn't do that. So a team would score, a PAT, you'd go to commercial, come back for the kickoff, and then you'd stay until they ran a play. So you'd see the players walk off the field and
yep.
run off the field, and they would talk about, up later, as Murder, She Wrote, about 60 minutes, right? And they would have to pass the time talking about it. I remember watching going, thinking, this feels really, really slow because normally I've been inundated with highlights and stats and commercial breaks and this and that. It's just amazing how much has changed.
Yeah, and we all have it in our heads. 60 minutes coming up, except on the West Coast.
Yep. Exactly. Followed by Murder, She Wrote.
Finally, so game three tomorrow in the East. I don't know. You look at the teams in the East right now compared to Houston and Golden State, I think they're a little limited. But either way, Boston really handled them both games. Seems Brad Stevens has really defensively game planned really well. You give the Cavs any shot to rally from down 2-0, or are the Celtics just going to annoy me and make the finals?
Oh, I still think Cleveland's a better team. I don't understand what's going on. This would be the worst team to ever make the finals in my life, at least. I mean, come on, they lost their best two players. You're going to go into the finals with a team that led by Al Horford and Marcus Smart. I mean, give me a break. It doesn't even make any sense. So I expect all the role players, the Corvers and the J.R. Smith, God, that guy's been brutal, to come out hot at home, feel better at home, or energized at home. They had a couple more days off. I expect them to play with more urgency and a sense of like, oh my God, we can't go out like this to this team. And I expect them to win both games. But at the same time, you know, if they don't have the heart, if they don't have the mindset to care, which sometimes it seemed like it, they're so lazy on defense. They're just giving open shots. It's insane. Then they could easily just get blown out again. So we'll see. I fully expect, though, that they should win both games.
Yeah, I'm hoping so, too. All right, I think we covered the gamut of subjects. Always appreciate your time. You have a magnificent weekend, and we'll catch up sometime next week.
All right, you too, man. Take care.
Take it easy, Aaron. All right, Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest.